This is News and Notes. I'm Farai Chidea. On today's roundtable, Attorney General Gonzalez wants federal judges to stop ruling on national security policies, and actor Isaiah Washington reignites the Grey's Anatomy feud. Joining us to talk about these topics and more are Marcelo Suarez Orozco, professor of education and globalization at New York University. Yvonne Bino, author of the book Stand and Deliver, Political Activism, Leadership, and Hip-Hop Culture, and Ron Christie, vice president of the lobbying firm DC Navigators and former deputy assistant to Vice President Dick Cheney. So welcome, everybody, and let's go on to the AG. Attorney General Alberto Gonzalez said federal judges should not make rulings that affect national security policy. Now, this opinion is tied to his criticism of how federal judges handle terrorism cases. The attorney general remarked yesterday that judges should defer to the will of the president and Congress on such matters. Now, Ron, do you believe that this is an action designed to basically take away the checks and balances in government, or is this standard policy?
I think looking at where we are right now and fighting and waging and winning the war on terrorism, that the United States government needs to have all the tools at its disposal to fight and win that war on terrorism. And one of those, of course, is a controversial program to eavesdrop on terrorist suspects who are here in the United States or those who are placing calls abroad. I would point out, however, in the news today, there was an article saying that the administration is now willing to turn over the authority to the FISA courts, the Foreign Intelligence Surveillance Act courts, to look at surveillance cases. So I think that we have to maintain a check and balance in our government. We must maintain that because that's what the Constitution calls for. And I couldn't imagine the Attorney General of the United States saying that judges or the judiciary branch should defer to the will of the executive branch without leaving those checks and balances in place.
But that is essentially what he's saying, isn't it?
Well, if you look further at what the Attorney General had said, he also said that we should not have activist judges who are injecting their personal opinions in the court proceedings, which I absolutely agree with. So it's a matter of interpretation or opinion, and I absolutely believe that judges should be even-handed regardless of their political philosophy and not to inject their personal beliefs on the bench, but we must maintain a separation of power between the three branches.
Well, let me turn to you, Yvonne. If you talk about activist judges, which is a term that is often used to attack judges of one political persuasion or the other, and you look at the government in general, doesn't every government official have personal opinions, and shouldn't every government official really allow statecraft to overcome his or her personal opinion? So is this really just a question that should be posed to the judges? Couldn't it be posed to the president and his staff as well?
I think that's an excellent assessment. Everyone comes to the table with their own particular biases and their own beliefs. So I think that objectivity is somewhat illusory. I think the bottom line here, what we should be clear about, what Attorney General Gonzalez was indeed talking about, was this whole idea that, you know, someone, a judge, should defer to the president. And I think that does set you up for the notion that one branch of government is less equal and less qualified. Judges are supposed to apply and interpret the law. So if there is a law in the book and two petitioners come to the table and have a dispute about what that law entails, the role of the judge is to then rule on that. So when we get into this idea of activist judges, that usually it means that the judges ruled against what you believe to be the appropriate application or interpretation of the law. Certainly in history there have been people who may have stretched it or been more flexible than other people would have called for, but I'm not really clear or really where this line should be drawn when we start talking about activism. I think the law is the law, and normally even a layperson can look at it and make some kind of assessment as to whether this is clear or not. So I think that's a red herring that continues to be thrown out there.
Marcelo, in the remarks that the Attorney General made, he seemed to put the judiciary on a lower level than the other two branches of the federal government, meaning the executive, the president, and the legislative, the Congress. He said, we want to determine whether he, using the gender, just for the judge, we want to determine whether he, the judge, understands the inherent limits that make an unelected judiciary inferior to Congress or the president in making policy judgments. Is the judiciary inferior to the president and Congress?
Well, this is, you know, a complicated dance that really goes to the heart of the division of labor, the division of power, the division of rights and responsibilities within the structure of our democracy. And that is a system that has certain frictions between the competing interests of the judiciary on the one hand, the legislative body on the other hand, and the executive on the other hand. In this specific case, the issue really has to do with the general domain of national security, the general domain of the conduction of war in very, very complicated times. So the matter of who ought to have the final word in the domain of national security, the conduction of the war on terror, he, meaning the attorney general, there are a lot of she judges, of course, would, of course, tend to privilege the authority of the executive vis-a-vis these national security, foreign war acts, and so on and so forth. But I think the elephant in the room here is the general tension between these national security concerns and rulings and confounding that with issues of civil rights, protection of privacy for U.S. citizens, and so on and so forth, with reference to the specific cases that we're seeing unfold now on a weekly basis, right? Wiretapping, the ability to open mail of U.S. citizens, and so on and so forth.
It's really a volatile time in these questions of governance and these questions of privacy. We will leave this topic for the moment. I'm sure we'll return to it. But Marcelo, I want to stay with you because you are someone who teaches, you're part of a campus environment. In another campus environment, Dillard University, FEMA issued post-Katrina financial assistance to hundreds of students who lived in the dorms. But now the government agency says, hey, we want our money back. The students were asked to repay the funds because, according to federal officials, they were ineligible to receive them. Now, FEMA only gave out the money because the students claimed that the college dorms were damaged and were their primary residence. Do you think that these students should pay FEMA back?
Well, I think this is the insult that comes after the injury. I mean, you, of course, have to review a case-by-case issue, but it seems to me that this is the continuation of the catastrophe, of the, let's call it, this is the man-made chapter of the natural disaster we saw in New Orleans, and this is simply the continuity of the mishandlings. This ought to be very, very clear for students for whom the residencies are their primary domicile, then they ought to qualify under the terms of the general arrangement. So it seems to me that this is another iteration of a series of mishandling and just mistake after mistake in the aftermath of Katrina. This ought to be reviewed in a case-by-case context. And for some students, they probably received the support they deserve. In other cases, mistakes might have been made.
Ron, I'll tell you a little story. Of course, at News & Notes, we've been covering Katrina and the aftermath since just a couple days after it happened. And I found out through someone who I was in contact with at Louisiana State University in Baton Rouge that there was one girl who had 20 relatives staying in her two-bedroom apartment because they had fled. There were a lot of students for whom campus housing was not only their primary residence, but it became the primary residence of their entire families. What's really going on with this FEMA request to get the money back from the Dillard students?
Well, FEMA, unfortunately, in looking at providing disaster assistance at the local level, has been a little shaky and wobbly at best. We've seen millions of dollars that have gone out improperly, that have been wasted, that have been abused, and have not been properly applied. But if you're looking at students at a particular university, and we've all been away to school, and you're in your school dormitory for most of the year, you're not living with your parents or your relatives back home, that's your primary residence. And it seems to me that if the qualifications for receiving this assistance were you were in your primary residence, and that's in the case apparently being asserted here that the students were in their primary residence, I agree with Marcelo that the FEMA ought to look at this on a case-by-case basis. But coming to students after the fact, after they've completed the application, it's up to the FEMA official, once these applications are received, to look to see whether or not these students are qualified. And if they deemed that they were qualified and gave the money out, and that was their primary domicile, it seems to me a little bit of adding insult to injury to come back to these kids and say, oops, it was our bad, so give us the money back, even though this was your residence. So FEMA needs to look at this on a case-by-case basis, but they've got to get their act together as far as dispersing federal resources, because we just don't have enough dollars to go around. And it seems that we want to make sure our students are the ones, and those who are hardest hit by Hurricane Katrina, receive the assistance they need.
Before I move on to Yvonne, I just want to reintroduce everybody. You are listening to NPR's News and Notes. I'm Farai Chidea, and we were just talking with Ron Christie, vice president of the lobbying firm DC Navigators, former deputy assistant to Vice President Dick Cheney. We are about to speak with Yvonne Bino, author of the book Stand and Deliver, and we've also got Marcelo Suarez Orozco, professor of education and globalization at New York University. So, Yvonne, how do you weigh in on this briefly?
Yeah, I don't think I stray too far from our other two guests. The GAO back in February said that FEMA had mishandled $1 billion worth of payments. They were either given out incorrectly or fraudulently. And I'm just not even clear. According to FEMA, a lot of this money went out the door because, according to them, they were trying to streamline their process. But I'm not clear why they could not have provided even some sort of disclaimer to everyone receiving a payment to the extent that if, in fact, down the road we find out that we have given you money incorrectly or you were not eligible, that we will then come back and request these monies back. At least that would have put people on notice. I think it is adding insult to injury. These are students. They lost everything, be it a computer, clothing, whatever have you. And with no notice, now telling them they have 30 days either to make full payment or some type of installment payment, when a lot of these students are not in the position to make any payment. So I think, frankly, they should just eat it. I think that they need to go forward and get the monies out of the people who they can get the money. But these students, certainly there might be some instances where the students knowingly filed false claims, but I seriously doubt that the vast majority of them were trying to bilk FEMA. And I think this is just their incompetence, and they should be responsible for dealing with that and setting up better processes for the future.
All right, we've only got a little time left, and we have one more dramatic story. Grey's Anatomy is kind of it's this golden series. Everyone loves it in terms of the critics, and it won for best drama at the Golden Globes Monday night. But there was backstage drama. During the awards press briefing, actor Isaiah Washington addressed the controversy between him and a gay co-star, who only came out after Isaiah Washington reportedly called him a slur for homosexuals that begins with an F. And Isaiah said during this press conference, "No, I did not call TR an F. It never happened." After the briefing, he spoke to Access Hollywood.
In the press room?
Yes.
What did you say about TR?
I did not call him the F word. It did not happen.
Did
not happen.
Did someone ask you, or did you just say, I'm going to get this out?
It's the truth. It did not happen.
Yeah.
It did not happen. It did not happen.
Is that just how it all gets out of whack?
It just did. I'm like, enough already.
Yeah.
Enough already. There's no way that I could do anything so vile and so horrible, not only to a castmate, but just to another fellow human being.
It is World War III on the set, apparently. T.R., the actor, T.R. Knight, who came out of the closet after the original incident, went on the show Ellen and said that Washington did call him the F word. Another cast member is saying, you know, I'll throw down any time for T.R. Don't press me. One of the female cast members. Yvonne, since Isaiah is an African-American actor who we have had on this show, does it make, because of the way that race is constructed in America, does it make African Americans as a whole look homophobic? Is there any larger implication to this?
Frankly, in my opinion, no, Farai. I think that this is, I wasn't there. So I don't know who said what to whom or what, if anything, was said. I think that for what we need to do at this point is take it at face value. If Isaiah Washington got on in the media and said he didn't say it, but there are other people who are claiming otherwise, we're going to have to see how this plays out. I think he did the right thing. If, in fact, he is innocent, he came forward, he made a statement, and we need to just accept it as that, because we're getting to he say, she say, and as we know with the N-word, unless you're in the room, and you just really don't know. You don't want to ever accuse someone of something, as he said, that vile, if in fact they didn't do it. So I would like to just reserve judgment to see how this plays out further.
What I would propose is to have Attorney General Al Gonzalez issue a finding on this.
I like that.
Matter of serious concern to our democracy.
Well, you know, Ron, I'll leave it with you. I realize this is a very different topic than the other ones we've been talking about. But, you know, there is still a need in television to have multiracial shows. And isn't it a shame on some level that this behind-the-scenes drama is taking away from the success of a multiracial show with an African-American woman who leads it?
I think that's true. Grey's Anatomy is one of my favorite TV shows, and it does have a very diverse and a very rich cast. And they should leave the drama to the set and keep their own personal opinions and their personal thoughts to themselves. And I agree with Yvonne. We don't know what happened. It was a he said, she said incident on the set of the show, and none of us were there and know what happened. But it seems to me that these people need to be cognizant of the fact that they're very highly paid, that they are role models to many in our community, and that they need to grow up and get over it and get along.
Yeah, well, the African-American woman who leads the show, meaning the executive producer and the showrunner, I'm sure she's not too happy about this. We will leave it there. Yvonne Bino, author of the book Stand and Deliver, Political Activism, Leadership, and Hip-Hop Culture. Ron Christie, vice president of the lobbying firm DC Navigators, former deputy assistant to Vice President Dick Cheney. And Marcelo Suarez-Orozco, professor of education and globalization at New York University, who may also have a line to Alberto Gonzalez to find out what he thinks about television drama. Thank you all so much.
Nice to be with you.